Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Text 17 from Canto 4, Chapter 14.
Rajan asadva matyebhyas choradhibhya prajanripa rakshan yatha balim grinan iha pretya chamodate. Rajan asadva matyebhyas choradibhya prajanripah rakshan yatha balim grinan iha pritya chamodate. Rajan, O King,
asadhu,
mischievous,
amatyebhyah,
from ministers,
chora adibhyah,
from thieves and rogues,
praja,
the citizens,
nripah,
the king,
Rakshan,
protecting,
yatha,
accordingly as,
valim,
taxes,
grinan,
accepting,
iha,
in this world,
pretya,
after death,
cha,
also,
modate,
enjoys. Translation, the saintly persons continued, when the king protects the citizens from the disturbances of mischievous ministers, as well as from thieves and rogues, he can, by virtue of such pious activities, accept taxes given by his subjects. Thus, a pious king can certainly enjoy himself in this world as well as in the life after death. And a page and a half purport by Srila Prabhupada. The duty of a pious king is described very nicely in this verse. His first and foremost duty is to give protection to the citizens from thieves and rogues, as well as from ministers who are no better than thieves and rogues. Formerly, ministers were appointed by the king and were not elected. Consequently, if the king was not very pious or strict, the ministers would become thieves and rogues and exploit the innocent citizens. It is the king's duty to see that there is no increase of thieves and rogues, either in the government secretariat or in the departments of public affairs. If a king cannot give protection to citizens from thieves and rogues, both in the government service and in public affairs, he has no right to exact taxes from them. In other words, the king or the government that taxes can levy taxes from the citizens only if the king or government is able to give protection to the citizens from thieves and rogues. Paragraph. Long paragraph. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 12.1.42, there's a description of these thieves and rogues in government service, as stated. prajaste baksha yeshanti mlecha rajanya rupinaha. Translated, these proud mlechas, parentheses, persons who are less than shudras, representing themselves as kings, will tyrannize their subjects, and their subjects, on the other hand, will cultivate the most vicious practices. Thus, practicing evil habits and behaving foolishly, the subjects will be like their rulers. Unquote. That was kind of like a long translation, paraphrased, of what the Sanskrit says in the 12th canto. The idea is that in the democratic days of Kali Yuga, the general population will fall down to the standard of shudras. As stated, kalo shudra sambhavaha, practically the whole population of the world will be shudra. A shudra is a fourth class man who is only fit to work for the three higher social castes. Being fourth class men, shudras are not very intelligent. Since the population is fallen in these democratic days, they can only elect a person in their category. But a government cannot run very well when it is run by shudras. The second class of men, known as kshatriyas, are especially meant for governing a country under the direction of saintly persons, brahmanas, who are supposed to be very intelligent. In other ages, in Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga, the government populace was not so degraded, and the head of government was never elected. The king was the supreme executive personality, and if he caught any ministers stealing, like thieves and rogues, he would at once have them killed or dismissed from service. As it was the duty of the king to kill thieves and rogues, it was similarly his duty to immediately kill dishonest ministers in government service or dismiss them. By such strict vigilance, the king could run the government very well, but the citizens would be happy to have such a king. The conclusion is that unless the king is perfectly able to give protection to the citizens from rogues and thieves, he has no right to levy taxes from the citizens for his own sense gratification. However, if he gives all protection to the citizens and levies taxes on them, he can live very happily and peacefully in this life, and at the end of this life be elevated to the heavenly kingdom, or even to the Vaikunthas, where he will be happy in all respects. So the instructions go on about the qualifications of a king and so forth. When you become familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, you will notice some very prominent topics that are discussed again and again from different angles, and one of them is the duties of a king. There's a whole bunch of it in the first canto, but over and over. And, of course, also the duties of a brahmana. There's a reason for that. It leads to good direction from the brahmanas, and good administration from the kshatriyas leads to a prosperous society, a spiritually progressive society. And having said that, bear in mind that the Srimad Bhagavatam was written by Vyasadeva. The whole of the Vedas were compiled by Vyasadeva, knowing that Kali Yuga would begin. And during Kali Yuga, the qualifications of the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas and everybody deteriorates. So it's almost a thoughtful person might consider, why get into all that? Because people don't have the qualifications to do it anyways. And regularly Prabhupada would express, as he's doing here, he's doing it kind of politely, but it's clear he doesn't like democracy. It within ISKCON, he contemplated at one point, you know, because the Western people like democracy, so maybe, but he backed off of that, and he preferred the Vedic society. The Vedic wisdom isn't a program of democracy. You don't need democracy. Democracy apparently was needed, as he's explaining, when in this verse and the previous verse, when the kings weren't qualified, and then they started behaving like rogues and thieves. And so the citizens said, we don't want to follow a rogue and thief. We want to elect somebody. But there's a problem, because there isn't a qualified person to elect. Like, I'm sometimes asked by devotees, should we vote? I say, it's your conscience, whatever you want to do, but I wouldn't vote. Because who are you going to vote for? Somebody unqualified as opposed to somebody else that's unqualified. So, you know, some devotees vote. Some persons are registered Democrats or something like that. Anyway, rather than getting into whether you should vote or not, vote for whom? And the playing field is, in Kali Yuga, as Vyasadeva envisioned, in the 12th canto, when things are really advanced in degradation, the description is given in the purport from 12.142. Not a pretty picture. So that the government heads are corrupt, and the people are corrupt, and they're, you know, brothers in corruption. But it's, so Kali Yuga is advancing, and there are countries of the world that are more advanced, and other countries of the world that's just more sophisticated, more covered, but going on, and it's nasty. And so one of the objections that Prabhupada spoke about democracy is that it breeds politics, because in order to, without getting into the whole like analysis of corruption, if I have to get votes, someone has to get votes, then I buddy up with somebody and you vote for me and I'll get what you want when I'm in power. You know, whether they do that or not is another thing, but that's what they do to get votes. So they have their power bases and their power bases and their power bases, and then they get elected. Because they promised people, you do this for me, I'll do that for you. And it's politics. So, in such a situation, the person loses their discrimination. Their decisions are not made based upon what's right. Their decisions are made based upon whether they'll get elected. Whether their constituent electorate will vote them in power the next time. So, it's not principle-based. So now, speaking on ministers, that's the populace. Then there's ministers, and you put some minister in a position, and you find out that they're corrupt, but you know they helped you get to your position, so you gave them the ministership, and then you're compromised about seeing properly and acting properly. So without integrity and without character, it's a mess. And how do you, so here, that's the situation. This is the sages trying to explain to a corrupt person that he should be a moral person, an upstanding, righteous, virtuous person. And here's the benefits. Here's what happens to you, here's what happens to the citizens, prosperity in this life and happiness in the next life. But they can't hear that. They can't act on principle. They've got another operating system. What to do? The Bhagavatam solution is elevate persons from being unqualified to qualified. That's what the Bhagavatam offers. And that's what is being offered in our life. And it's challenging because we're in an atmosphere using the language of the Bhagavatam or Prabhupada's commentary, it's surcharged with opposition. And we're supposed to become elevated, like swimming upstream. That's like anyone that's been to the Ganges knows what that for me, that's a nice image. You can be a good swimmer and try to swim upstream, and you're going downstream because the Ganges is flowing very swiftly downstream. Or you go to Puri, and they always say this. The undertow is, I don't know if it's any more so in Puri than any other place, but it's common. We warned some devotees, and sure enough, they went out a little too far in the undertow. They're out, and they're going out and going out. And yes, someone had to go and rescue them. And people drown because, you know, you may be a good swimmer, but the current is very strong the other direction. So, similarly, the flow of degradation is very strong. It's like a whirlpool. The modes of nature work like this. Satyuga begins, and it's more or less the mode of goodness, of course, with some tinge of passion and ignorance. So, as the acting with a tinge of passion and ignorance. It's very simple. Here's a bucket of white paint. You just take an eyedropper full of blue and an eyedropper full of red and then stir it. It's off-white. How much white do you have to put in to get it to be pure white? You can't. Just like try to put some more white, but it's still... And then as long as there's the tinge of passion and a tinge of ignorance, then activities that are performed are going to have a corresponding reaction of ignorance and passion coming into the system. So, more blue, and more red, and stir. What happens? It gets darker and darker. What do? You have to dump it out and get a new white bucket. That's what happens at the end of Kali. Kalki avatar comes and finishes everybody, and Satyuga begins because the personalities who are in the upper Vajri, they descend and they start Satyuga. That's how it goes way back up again. Just fill the bucket up again. But because it's the material world, there's passion and ignorance. It's so back to this other metaphor, like a whirlpool. You put an object, let's say, like, you know, little chip of wood on the outside of a whirlpool, and it goes around and around and around and around and around, and it's just very, it goes towards the center, and it goes toward the center, it's gone. It moves faster, 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 gone. That's like the progression of the modes of nature, the lower modes of nature, in the progressive four yugas. Degradation becomes quicker, 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 gone. Bottoms out. 12th canto. The end of the age of Kali. We don't have to wait. We can hear what it's going to be like, and we can see it happening. So all this nice talk of the qualification of a king and the qualification of brahmanas, where is the place for that? In progressive Kali Yuga. The Bhagavatam is giving us the standard, two things. The Bhagavatam is giving us the standard of what mode of goodness life is like, or proper government, proper Brahminical culture. And the Bhagavatam is giving us, you read very carefully from the first canto of chapter 2, how to raise one from the lower modes to the mode stitvam sattve prasidati, to the mode of goodness, and then from the mode of goodness into the realm of transcendence. And the method of the Bhagavatam is shravanam kirtanam Vishnu, the process of devotional service that begins with hearing and chanting of the personality of Godhead. And the topics of the Bhagavatam are just that. So Shrinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana, the spiritual piety, not the material kind, the spiritual piety of the soul is restored. So how important it is for us to distribute books, disseminate transcendental knowledge, make arrangements for people to hear Krishna's holy name, go on congregational chanting of the holy name and distribute books, and of course live that life ourselves regularly in our homes, read and regularly in our homes chant and practice what the message of the Bhagavatam and the scriptures are, and give others the opportunity, uplift as we have been given the gift. It then becomes we're entitled, we're allowed, and we're duty bound, in fact, to give the gift to others. That's Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And gradually, the whirlpool effect, the vortex going down, 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 can be reversed. And, you know, it's swimming upstream, it's surcharged with opposition to do so, but in the association of devotees, and by upholding the standards of hearing and chanting properly, then one can become uplifted. Our temples, Prabhupada created temples to be centers where that hearing and chanting would take place. He would say like this: many of our temples were once churches. And it's true. You can name a whole bunch of them, just in U.S. and Canada, a whole bunch of them. And in one case, it was also a synagogue. And so the people, Prabhupada's explanation, people came to this country for religious freedom. They fled the tyranny of oppression, of not being able to practice their religion as they wished in Europe, and they came at great risk to colonize in America with the Protestant ethic of being true to our religious beliefs in God. And so churches were formed for that reason. And then as prosperity came, and the complexity of life that comes with prosperity, and the pride in one's heart that comes with prosperity, the churches were less populated. They couldn't maintain them. And so it diminished. And so those became places that the Hare Krishna movement, then Prabhupada would say, that which was empty now is full. Because of where there's life, life attracts life. So in the world, certainly let's just say within the United States and Canada, but let's say just the United States, there are temples that are now depleted in terms of persons living in the temple, and they've become more of a congregational based program. And in some cases, this is like a little social commentary, but it's become more like a church where there's a Sunday program and everything happens at the Sunday program, and the rest of the week it's just maintaining the deities without life happening in the temple. And that's not a good model. It's a great opportunity to have a temple and have the facilities of the temple, but those that have the facility of the temple should be very grateful that it's been supplied by the previous devotees who helped create the temple and worship of the deity, and engage in the hearing and chanting activities regularly. Like this is, I'm in a Brahminical way saying, and it can be said in an administrative way a little differently, like it must, or else is the administrative way. And the Brahminical way is, it's wonderful. It's a great opportunity to fully participate in the hearing and chanting activities, the fixed programs that are provided within our temple. And when that is done, and when the deity worship is nicely done, everything flourishes. It's you can say it's like magic, but you know it's certainly predictable magic. It happens. I can give examples where it was things were depleted, and when that principle was, we're going to do this principle. However many of us, we're going to do this principle, and things started to come up. When Krishna is pleased and the heart becomes cleansed by the hearing and chanting process, wonderful things can happen. Wonderful things do happen. And life attracts life. And things start to flourish. And standards start to come up. And that's Krishna consciousness. That's the program that Prabhupada gave us. That's what's being described. How do we get from the degradation of the age of Kali to this nice model that in the purports Prabhupada is pointing to? He always comes to the chanting of the holy name, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And from that, what is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? It's an appeal to Radha Krishna to be engaged in Krishna's service. Make our heart pure and fit for being engaged in Krishna's service, because we're not qualified. How can we ask to be engaged in Radha Krishna's service? We're so unqualified. But if our heart becomes cleansed and that sincere desire to serve awakens, and the nice direction and how to serve in the administrative capacity or Brahminical capacity, how to serve Krishna, we're greatly fortunate. And one who is feeling greatly fortunate, when from what's inside comes out, one will act accordingly with gratitude to primarily our founder Acharya, who has given us these teachings and has given us this process at personal risk to bring upliftment. Just as the sages, they're concerned about the citizens, Prabhupada and Vyasadeva and our whole Pacific succession, concerned about the welfare of the victims of the age of Kali, the unfortunate citizens who have unqualified leaders and unqualified teachers and are going with the flow. Just as is exactly as is described here in this little paraphrased section of the 12th canto. One other point, and I'll end, is Prabhupada's making reference to the government secretariat and the Department of Public Affairs. As the verse is speaking about amatyas, that's ministers, and asadhu is corrupt. Sadhu and asadhu. So previously we're just speaking about the choras, the thieves and rogues. It's like one of the names of Krishna is Makhan Chora, because he stole butter. He was a butter thief. So that being a thief is bad. Being a chora is bad, but when Krishna steals, it's good. Because it's his butter. It's not someone else's butter. It's a leela. So chora, Prabhupada just expanded it as thieves and rogues. The populace of, the unguided populace of Kali Yuga. Everyone becomes a chora. And then the minister is also a sadhu, unqualified. So he's called this the secretariat. Now, when unqualified people populate the secretariat, it's a problem. But if there's qualified people that populate the secretariat, it's good. What's a secretariat? My understanding of a secretariat is elected people come and go. And then there's the secretariat that maintains things even when the elected people come and go. The bad sense is the bureaucrats. The good sense is the people that make sure everything happens. Like an example, in ISKCON is we have a corresponding secretary who's the same person every year. Ananda Tirtha, and any of you that know Ananda Tirtha, boy, he's brahminical. He's pure through and through, very pure. And his wife, Radha Sundari, she is the executive committee secretary. So the executive committee comes and it goes. Members of the GBC come and go, but the secretariat maintains. And then here's another layer that, just for your edification of how things are moving forward. There are three areas that there's now an executive secretariat answerable to the GBC. The GBC created it for the following reason. There are teachings that Prabhupada gave, a whole abundant set of teachings that are mandates for the GBC. How many of our GBC members are tuned in to freshly aware of those mandates to the GBC? Who can say? Then there's legislation, second area. There's laws of ISKCON or resolutions passed by the GBC that were very thoughtful and very useful, many of which have not been implemented, and some of which are archaic and need to be revisited. And then third, there's a group of people, contemporary individuals, who are working on strategic plans for, let's say, devotee care. There's a devotee care committee. And there's a succession of leaders committee. And then there's a whole bunch of them. Developing outreach programs, bridge preaching groups, and you know, so different groups. So those things that those groups, education development group, communications group. So there are things that they're coming up with that are very valuable for our GBC members to see are happening in their zones and happening globally. So we've created an executive secretariat. Here's like really good news. One of the first things that the executive secretariat is mandated by the GBC to do is an instrument of accountability of the GBC members, their performance evaluation. After so many years, we finally have a program, at least developing a program, where the GBC member and plural members are going to be held accountable for their performance. You know, in three strikes, you're out. Kind of thing. Okay, here's your performance evaluation. And you're doing well in a number of areas, not doing so well in some other areas. What help do you need? Here's some support. Here's some education and training. Here's some resources. Very good. Next year, how are you doing in this area that you're to develop in. Oh, it's still so. And at a certain point in time, if performance is just not improving, then, you know, the gentle tap on the shoulder saying, you may need a different service, Maharaj or Prabhu. And, you know, let's explore together what other service might be suitable for you. Because we need our GBC members to be performing according to these three criteria just mentioned. Yay! Because then it's going to filter down. Then, you know, double presidents. I'm also going to have some system of performance evaluation. And then becomes like the culture of performance evaluation. And who's going to do that? It's the secretariat. Responsible people, trusted people, but not, you know, in that position themselves, because, you know, there's the tendency to not want to disturb a person who you're the colleague with. So it's another group of people that will do the performance evaluation. And the GBC is fully behind it, like unanimously behind it, which is refreshing. And so that's this government secretariat as an example of some government secretariat functions within ISKCON or specific with the GBC. And then Prabhupada uses this term Department of Public Affairs. He uses it twice. It seems that he's using that Department of Public Affairs as the rogues and thieves category. So like, you know, the Chora group. Chora Abhidhi from the thieves and rogues. It's also part of government secretariat that they have a public affairs office. At least I'm familiar with that from making applications for permits in the city of New York, where, you know, for our Rath Yatra permit, we would go to the public affairs officer of the local precinct. So they have people who go and arrest people, then they have their public affairs. You bring something to the law enforcement group, and they have their public affairs officer. So at least that's the model that I'm accustomed to, but it seems that Prabhupada is using this departments, plural, of public affairs means, you know, those that do the arresting of the troublemakers, the rogues and thieves. So there's the government people policing themselves and the government people policing the public affairs. It's a nice way to put it. You know, law enforcement agency, public affairs. And the government heads are to see that those are, that they're operating to correct persons who are appointed officials who are corrupt or who are in this other example I was giving, underperforming. Maybe doing some things very nicely, maybe suited for some other service, but they shouldn't be doing some service they're not suited for if they're not able or willing to come to the standard. And then the last part is it's Prabhupada is saying here repeatedly that's the pre-qualification for taxation. You know, the theme of democracy, you know this one, no taxation without representation. That's like a democracy slogan. And what the Bhagavatam is saying is no taxation without protection. A good leader, a king, like Ramachandra described in Ramayana, persons could come and see him. Imagine if the president had a policy like Ramachandra had. Anybody in the kingdom can come and talk to me with some concern. They have a long line at their door. because it's Kali Yuga. There's lots of things to be disturbed about. But it's from practical experience, I can say it's not easy being a government officer, or because it's Kali Yuga. And we're not qualified, and those who we're giving direction to are not qualified, and it's very difficult. Not easy. See, both ways. It's very difficult. It's not easy. But at least directionally, the upholding of the standards is a duty of a leader. And the Brahminical group should also be setting nice example and encouraging the activities to be performed that are uplifting according to the Bhagavatam standards. We should do these things if we want to see ourselves and others around us, certainly those who we have some care for and responsibility unto, to see that things go up. That there's elevation of character, development of character and good qualities. And we're to do this together. That's what the Hare Krishna temple is. Come together, hear and chant, see how we can purify ourselves, see how we can apply these principles in our lives, work cooperatively together, despite tendencies of Kali Yuga to quarrel, work cooperatively together to achieve these things. Based on the foundation is hearing and chanting nicely. Okay, I'll end. See if there's any discussion. Yes.
In Prabhupada, I've been to here in the Western countries, such an innovation, such an innovative person. His appearance was during a unique mentality,
yes.
National mentality.
Yes.
And we were somewhat expansive at that time.
Very.
There were a lot of people who came to serve Srila Prabhupada who were risk takers.
Yes.
And open to whatever he said.
Yes.
Go here, go there.
You got the picture. And then?
And I don't know that we're in that mentality now, but my question is, how do we innovate that with the people that are coming after Prabhupada disciples, or as we fade out? How do we innovate that sense of adventure and taking profusion?
The phrase that we're using, contemporary phrase, is be relevant and relatable. So it really requires that we have so many audiences, some good news to report to you from my first-hand experience of being in the field, is young American people are more in that direction than the previous three decades. I would say in the last 4 years, spiritually seeking young American people is on the rise. Open for, and what they're looking for is, saying a few quick phrases, an experience, not like necessarily truth, but experiential, and they're looking for the phrase used commonly is social activism, or where they're going to make a difference. They want to contribute to where they're going to make a difference to the quality of life. One of the reasons why kirtan is so popular is it's an experiential. They may not know what it is, but they experience something and they like the experience, or they, where the train is going, they don't know. So therefore, when impersonalists also chant, you know, they feel something, so they go, they get on that train. They, you know, they find out later what's at the end, or they don't find out, they just keep going. So that's like one group of people. That again, from my experience, there are different constituents. So one has to be able to relate to different constituents. That's the spiritual marketplace today. For example, we were discussing this at our, we had a regional meeting of persons who are doing things in the Midwest, and we have lots of little interest groups like a Spanish community, and they have their needs and they relate to each other, although they're not their bodies, they relate to each other. And then there's the Black community, and then there's the Chinese community, and then there's the Polish community, and there's the Russian community. And if their needs can be met, then amongst them someone can evolve or be identified as someone that can see beyond the bodily platform, but can relate to, you know, those that have are in the bodily platform, and then can be in a, like an acharya or a little shreshta, an example setting person that others can follow. And then that's how we can spread Krishna consciousness. That's one of the models of spreading Krishna consciousness today. Young people attract young people, like attracts like. So it requires a young person, or a Chinese person, or a Spanish person, or a Black person, or a, you know, whatever it is, person, Russian person, from the different constituencies, that can see beyond the body, can have good sadhana, and just set an example, and then that will, in course of time, attract. And then those persons can, in the leaders, this is the one of the challenges, can relate with one another, who are leaders from other constituencies, and show by example how we work together. That's a model that really, for me at least, it resonates. How do we, it's being entrepreneurial to extend ourselves in different ways, and what are we going to end up with? Are we going to end up with, you know, the fabric of Krishna consciousness is lost because we extended ourselves in that way, or is it actually what the fabric of Krishna consciousness is? It's for all different varieties of people, regardless of race or color or language or culture or background. The counterculture group, which Prabhupada very successfully drew from, is no longer. It's another. Can you fix the curtain? Okay, thanks. It's another audience. The spiritual marketplace looks different today. But there are persons that, from those different my experiences, from those different constituencies, that get it. And then they, in turn, can give leadership with support to their constituent group. And kirtan then becomes the melting pot. Kirtan and japa. That everyone can do together. And, you know, differences drop. And then comes the social interaction, and being able to respect on the spiritual, on the soul platform, not just like the mode of goodness platform, but the spiritual platform, respecting differences. That's a model that to me makes sense, and hopefully we can grow with that model. But the different groups, just like, let's, you know, the economic factor, when during the period of time that you described, our economics was book distribution, Harinam and book distribution, and we lived very meagerly. And then Prabhupada introduced other things like
spiritual sky for householders to have a business and contribute to the temple. And then life membership. So today the picture is different. We need, you know, an economy where largely today, I'm just speaking very bluntly, largely our economy today is the non-resident Indian community. When book distribution morphed into paraphernalia and the whole thing collapsed, we didn't have an economy. We turned to our Indian brethren and they rescued us. So that element is necessary. Not just like that's all we do now because now we have our finances together. We just take care of those people and they'll take care of us and haribol. We have a mission. So that element needs to be there and they need to help see and have a vision for the mission. And then, so then we need brahmacharis that can do outreach full time, just like haribol. Go and do harinam every day and distribute books every day and not have the financial pressure. Just go and be brahmacharis and be happy. And give Krishna and give the holy name and give prasadam and do it in different ways and, you know, be responsible. But that's not like where the financial burden rests. So we need cooperation from different constituencies. And then once there's that core of brahmacharis, you can do all kinds of creative things these days with these different audiences. We're doing it. Just one example. Just like a grain of rice. And then there's the big pot. Really quickly, for the last 4 years, I've been going to China. I started when I was the chairman of the GBC thinking, nobody told me what I'm supposed to do. What does being chairman of the GBC mean? Nobody clued me in. No, nothing. So I thought, okay, well, I'm supposed to think about the world. So what's important in the world? China's important. And, you know, details. Tamal Krishna, he's gone. Giridhari Swami, his health is a wreck. He can't go. And the other GBC is blacklisted, bounced by the government. So they've got a quarter of the world's population, and nobody's saying haribol. So I should go and say haribol. So you people are important. So I went with that. And what I saw convinced me it's really important. So I've been continuing. And fast forward over 4 years, part of my service that I've accepted is there's an ever-increasing Chinese population in America, especially in the universities. So I'd like to reach out to the university population and contact Chinese people, most of whom are going to go back to China, and help them be introduced to Krishna consciousness. So there's a number of things that are developing. Just by Vaisheshika Prabhu's, where attention goes, energy flows. You heard that one? It's true. So paying attention to it, it's starting to grow. And because others know that I'm doing this, for example, one of the brahmacharis in Chicago met a Chinese couple and they're socially connected. She's from China, born and raised in Singapore, now living in America with her husband. I don't know about children. I just met her Sunday at Rath Yatra. So one of the brahmacharis met her and has spoken with the couple and they're going to... He knows all kinds of Chinese organizations in Chicago, and he's going to see if he can set up a program where bhakti yoga and mantra yoga, and the brahmacharis will go there and have kirtan and speak something. If they need a translator, they can translate. And then there's this population, growing population. And then that population can help us with the Chinese students that come to the universities, along with our brahmacharis. So it becomes global. as well as local. And so many other grains of rice in the pot. So having brahmacharis in the temple, it's not only nice, it's essential for our mission. Because what can our householders do? They can do some things. Have our monthly Sankirtan festival and those kinds of things. But, what Chakri and Divyananda have been doing for years, we need some younger people to take up that mission and do that service and feel supported by the congregation, and gradually like attracts like, and there's a little group of brahmacharis that can do these nice things to the different constituencies and Harinam and Book District. So that's a model that I can see some future in it. Different than how Prabhupada did it, because the times are different. But the principles are the same. And it's based on cooperation or unity and diversity.
So, emphasis on Harinam is still very
important. Oh, yeah.
And, but you didn't mention prasadam distribution.
Oh, of course, prasadam distribution. Harinam, book distribution, prasadam distribution. And in colleges, Prabhupada, that's where the leaders came from. We left all the details. Not all, but many of the persons who Prabhupada relied on came from that venue. And Krishna arranged it. I learned this much later. Yeah, okay, anyway. While in New York, one man came forward and said to Prabhupada, "I'll support a center in Buffalo if you send some person there who run the center." So Prabhupada requested Rupanuga went, and something like 25 devotees came from that university. Because of the times, it was unique. Without all the details, because I was a student there, I know the details. It was unique. They had this alternative college. It was the result of a student takeover of the administrative building. And then there was negotiations with the administration and the students. They set up alternative college, call it College A. And one of the courses was Rupanuga's Bhagavad Gita course. And in that Bhagavad Gita course, taught by Rupanuga in College A, on campus, a whole bunch of devotees got to hear Bhagavad Gita as it is, and got credit for it. And they became devotees, and then Prabhupada sent them to different places. So, etc. So I said, the model is going to look a little differently, but the principle doesn't change. So we'll say those four things. Harinam, book distribution, prasadam distribution, college outreach. The same pillars are there. The form may look a little differently. And then there's all these different constituencies, audiences, groups of people that, if we make ourselves relevant and relatable, they can participate. And then learn to respect. Because it's one of the things that's a challenge I've heard from educators in the public schools, is having the students respect other cultures. So as that's there in the public schools, for sure it's going to creep into ISKCON, where we have diversity. How are we going to show respect to diverse people? It's natural. It's the medium in which we live. It's the environment where we are. It's diversity. So how are we going to respect the diversity when we're trying to be nice devotees? It's very strong in the unity factor and respecting the diversity factor. So there's there's some brahmacharis, and then there's families with children, and one should respect the other, and et cetera, et cetera. They have their role and they have their role, and Krishna's at the center and Prabhupada's chanting, book distribution, prasadam distribution,
and college outreach is something we all do together. Anyway, I'm going to have to end. It's 9 o'clock. Sorry. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.